KPCW News Time now, 8:12. Good morning. Well, the Wasatch County subdivision Brighton Estates, just adjacent to Bonanza Flat, has lots of hurdles to cross if a property owner wants to build there. There are more than 400 platted lots in the subdivision. Fire access and water availability are two big obstacles to successfully pulling a building permit. According to Wasatch County building official Robert McDonald, Brighton Estates is designated as a dry subdivision because it doesn't have the water. Property owners are having a harder time getting building permits. He says not many building permits have been issued in the past several years.
The issues were fire-related, so we weren't issuing permits. The Homeowners Association petitioned the council, and they did adopt an ordinance that allowed property owners to build, I believe it's a 1,000-square-foot house without fire protection. But to this point, I don't think we've had any applications using that exception.
McDonald says that there are just a handful of houses bigger than 1,000 square feet, but they were built in the early 2000s. Wasatch County adopted an ordinance requiring sprinklers for structures over 1,000 square feet, but the roads in the neighborhood don't meet code for fire access.
The legislature passed a law a little over a year ago that allowed jurisdictions to require sprinklers by ordinance and by certain criteria, and one of the criteria was if it's the property's accessed with the road grade of 10% or greater for a 500 continual feet, then the county could require sprinklers. And so that ordinance was drafted and adopted. Sprinklers would be required in Brighton Estates.
Wasatch Fire District Chief Ernie Giles says that he could get his equipment up Pine Canyon Road from Woodway, but not into the subdivision itself.
In a nutshell, what really keeps them from getting a permit in that country is not so much Pine Canyon Road. Pine Canyon Road does breach the percentage of grade that we allow. More inside the subdivision, gets a lot of these homeowners. I don't know if you've been up in, if we're talking Brighton Estates, a lot of those roads interior in that subdivision are two-track roads, so they're not improved. They don't have any gravel on them. That's really a hard-surfaced road. They're a two-track, most of them dirt road.
McDonald says he hasn't issued building permits in Brighton Estates in the past several years, other than for small outside structures. He says the property owners don't seem to agree on how the area should be developed.
There has been a market of people, where they're buying and selling and speculating a little bit. And there's kind of two factions up there. There's two different property owner associations that kind of contend with one another, and I think their philosophies are completely different based on whether they want fire protection or not, and whether they want to fix the roads or not. They seem to work against each other. I know there was a special service district formed at one point, and they were going to try and put fire protection in and do some road grades with it, and there was another property owner association that opposed it, and they finally went to county council. And my understanding, this special service district was finally dissolved.
McDonald says that there are a couple of small water companies that service certain lots there. It's expensive to drill, though, and he says there are no guarantees of finding water. Park City currently working with Utah Open Lands to establish a conservation easement for Bonanza Flat, basically next door to Brighton Estates. It could eliminate snowmobiling on Park City's property. McDonald says if property owners wanted to build in Brighton Estates, then that issue of snowmobile access could have an impact on that decision.
I mean, if you have a cabin or a lot and wanted to build a cabin up there, and all of a sudden Park City, which now owns all of that property above you, won't allow you to snowmobile across it, it kind of takes desire to use it. They may have access on the forest property, my guess is a lot of the snowmobiling would be on that property.
Fire Chief Giles says that the building department determines if the property owners are meeting the code requirements.
So up till, a year ago, there was no permits being issued because nobody wanted to meet the standard. And I had several meetings. I mean, we've had court hearings on it. It's been challenged and something they can't overcome. It's if you do this and this and meet the law, basically meet the requirements, you'll sign off on your permit.
That's Wasatch Fire District Chief Ernie Giles. Well, as I said, some residents of Brighton Estates, including the president of the Brighton Estates Property Owners Association, takes exceptions with those comments in that report. Joining me now in the studio to discuss their take on the situation, I have HOA President Mark Fisher, along with longtime Brighton Estates property owner Sean Brown. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So for those who don't know where we're talking about, Brighton Estates, of course, a 400-lot subdivision located in the mountains there above Park City, accessed either via the Guardsman Pass Road or Pine Canyon Road from the Heber Valley. So according to our report with building official Robert McDonald, there haven't been any building permits other than some small outbuildings in the last 3 years. Mark, you say that that's not the case. It's the last building permit was 12 years ago.
Yes. Good morning to all the audience listening. The reason we're here today is not to add to the controversy, but to clarify some facts. I've been president of this volunteer property owners association now for 6 years and been involved for 20 years. And it's just a fact that the last building permit was issued to John and Pam Carroll in the spring of 2006. The only thing I can think that Mr. McDonald is referring to is that if you have an existing structure on a lot, you're allowed to build up to a 200-square-foot shed, garage, or gazebo. But we're here today, again, to try to clarify some things in the effort to move forward in a positive manner.
Okay, well, let's clarify something. As we heard in the report, we've got at least two homeowner associations that seem to be at odds with one another. So you guys are from the Brighton Estates Property Owners Association. There's also the Pine Canyon Property Owners Association.
Well, quick summary on that. The Brighton Estates group has been there since the very beginning. We represent 90% of the people that live up there. This small group of Pine Canyon has a maximum of 10 members, and these are people that have cabins with water and that are trying to thwart development. Do you know what the definition of an environmentalist is, Leslie?
You tell me.
Somebody that already has a cabin in the woods. So essentially what we've got here is a small group of elderly people who are trying to prevent younger people from coming and living the dream that they've enjoyed in Brighton Estates and using their land as open space, which is what gets me fired up because we're trying to make it equal for all.
All right. Let's talk about some of those issues. Wasatch County, as we reported, designated Brighton Estates as a dry subdivision. You tell me you've never even heard of that term?
I've been involved in this area for 20 years, and I never heard that term until it was on the radio last week. We have plenty of water.
Who's we?
Sean, why don't you take that one?
Leslie, Brighton Estates isn't different than anywhere. You have to come up to code, and part of coming up to code is providing a year-round healthful source of water. It's potentially improving roads to the county's standard. I'd like to add that the Wasatch County officials have been very good to work with recently. We're a little bit curious on why our service district was dissolved after the county encouraged us to put together a service district 5 years ago in order to address the infrastructure issues. But from my perspective, now that that's potentially dissolved, private enterprise is moving forward with the hard part of getting water out to people's properties, which is the distribution system. We recently had approved by Wasatch County's third-party engineer the first phase of engineering for water distribution in Brighton Estates, and that'll be in Plat 4A, which when you come up to the top of Empire Pass and look south is right out in that meadow in front of you. So when you ask who is we in terms of who has water, it's fairly randomly dispersed throughout Brighton Estates. We have enough water rights for 221 homes. There are currently 107 structures up there. About 40 of them already have water service. You can go and punch your own well. The likelihood that you'll hit water is quite high. I think it's running about 94%. And the cost in the past 10 years has ranged between $14,000 to hit water and $250,000, depending on what elevation you're at. That high figure, they started drilling at 9,000 feet. The low figure, they were around 8,300 feet. So
So when we talk about 200 water for 221 homes,
mm-hmm.
400 lots, what happens to the other? Or some of those lots are combined?
That's a great question. Over the years, I've done my best to coalesce ownership around water rights in Brighton Estates. We're not quite in a perfect world yet, but the ownership numbers are down around 230 owners of those 436 lots, and that's almost 221 water rights worth. When the music stops, I imagine there will still be people who don't have a water right and hence can't get water and hence can't get a building permit, but they've had ample opportunity to over the years.
Well, let's just talk a little bit about, you mentioned the water distribution service. I mean, right now there is no water company. There is
no there are several water companies actually.
Okay. So, but no, like we would see with a municipal water company, where we've got water tanks and we've got water lines that go to each of the individual homes. My understanding is what you guys have up there, what most people have up there, are just big plastic cisterns that hold thousands of gallons of water.
Well, I'd like to digress just a little bit because of the fact that everybody was approaching getting their water in different ways. Like on my properties, I have a beautiful well that provides all the water I could use for me and, frankly, probably 50 of my neighbors. So what we have, though, is in October of 2013, we established a Brighton Estates Special Service District at the urging of the Park City Council. Wasatch County Council. Now, the Wasatch County Council is the authority over the Brighton Estates Special Service District, which would be true anywhere in Utah. The reason we're so frustrated is if you listen to Mr. Giles and Mr. McDonald's interview again, they will say we haven't put the proper infrastructure in. Well, in October 2013, the Wasatch Council formed the Brighton Estates Special Service District. That was nearly 5 years ago for the express purpose of allowing us to have a SSD which qualifies for government low-interest financing. That then gives us the money to provide the proper infrastructure. So that flies in the face of what those two officials said. What we're trying to understand still today is why the SSD was canceled on a 4-2 vote. And we've never been given a proper answer. 71% of the people wanted the Brighton Estates Special Service District. Only 29% did not.
So that vote actually just happened recently, the dissolution of the Special Service District. Who asked for that to be done?
The opposition. The people that have cabins with water were very vocal. Most of them are retired. They spent a lot of time down at the county building, bending the ear of the folks down there. Most of the people that want this Brighton Estates Special Service District are either hardworking young parents or they live out of state and don't have the time to go there and make their case.
Did you know it was happening, that the vote was going to be taken? I mean, I guess I'm just wondering why you didn't storm the county council.
We were ambushed. Yeah, we did not have any idea that they were going to dissolve the meeting. I was there at the meeting. I begged them to continue. And because there's a process under SSD statute that allows you to just shelve it, you don't have to dissolve it. So we're currently in a lawsuit with Wasatch County over whether it was properly dissolved or not. And again, Judge Jennifer Brown will resolve it. And as I've said to everybody, we will accept her decision.
So in the 4 years that the Special Service District existed, what did it do?
Well, this is why we're, again, a little upset. We're a relatively small property owners group, and at the urging of the Wasatch County Council, we spent $110,000 between engineering studies with Bowen Collins and formation documents with lawyers and going back and forth and negotiating. The total tab to get all this set up was $110,000, and so that's why we want to see it through to a completion. Either that or we want our money back, which, of course, we're not going to get from the county.
So if this had moved forward, this Special Service District, what would it have done then? You said it could get low-interest loans, but what were the plans? I mean, what were the plans moving forward then with that?
So there's a company called Bowen Collins Engineering Company, and they were hired by the county to do a infrastructure study to determine where all the roads needed to be to improve them, and where all the water lines needed to go to get them in the right easements and right-of-ways. And so basically it was about, $14 to $15 million to take care of?
$11 million.
$11 million. Yeah. Okay. So when you divide that into and amortize it over 30 years and put it on everybody's property tax bill, it's not a big number. And the reason, again, we're frustrated is because we did not come to a natural conclusion. And the technical word is not a vote. But at the end of the day, everybody that paid this $110,000 never got a chance to, quote unquote, vote to approve it or to deny it. It was just killed on a 4-2 vote one evening out of the blue.
Irrespective, Leslie, things are moving forward on the waterfront, and I think we're going to start seeing people pulling building permits en masse as water infrastructure starts to spread in Brighton Estates through private efforts. Private efforts were ready to go back in 2011, and coincidentally, that's when the county got interested in forming a service district.
Yeah, let's just talk a little bit about, because I feel you two feel like you, the government is thwarting your efforts to improve your private property.
No, I feel that government's actually helping at this point. Witness the approved engineering that we have for water distribution in the area.
Well, wait a minute, though. There's no question the government has thwarted our efforts for 20 years to have proper infrastructure, especially the last 4 years in Brighton Estates. What Sean is talking about is the default position because we couldn't do the special service district.
That's true.
Okay? So there's no question. We're paying residential property taxes on legally platted property and being prevented and denied building permits because the roads are not up to fire standard. And that's why we wanted to do the special service district. As I said to you offline, I would love to have Mike Davis come up here and have a debate with me on this issue live on the radio.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because I understand your frustration as a property owner. And at the same time, I can see the government's point of view saying if there was a fire up there, government's job is to the protection of public health, safety and welfare. And they would be at a loss to help you guys.
I'm happy to address that. Robert McDonald and Ernie Giles, well, in particular Robert, talked a lot about fire sprinklers. And fire sprinklers are the best way to prevent fires in Brighton Estates. The old cliche is when seconds count, government takes minutes to get there. And, you know, Ernie admitted that, you know, that while they can get up Pine Canyon Road, it's difficult to get into Brighton Estates. You know, perhaps with all the subdivisions that Wasatch County has throughout the county that have, you know, challenging roads, maybe they need some more equipment that has four-wheel drive, perhaps. Anyway, the sprinkler ordinance was a good one, but it's kind of odd how it was presented. I think anybody who builds in Brighton Estates or anywhere that's far from fire trucks should put in sprinklers. It's a relatively minor cost.
And then, again, there's water just from the wells to be able to put.
We have wet water for hundreds of homes already. There are 13 wells in Brighton Estates, and several of them qualify for being public water sources. They've been providing water for many years. The water rights, like I mentioned earlier, there's enough for 221 homes. But, you know, if we get pushed in the seasonal direction too far, we could push to cut that to a quarter acre foot, because that's what seasonal cabins need, and then you end up with 400 homes. I think Park City is really at an inflection point with Brighton Estates, and it's in particular access for the public up to the recent purchase of Bonanza Flats, $38 million worth. If the city, you know, wants Brighton Estates to not be anything more than it has been, then that really pushes Brighton Estates towards seasonal nature forever, and that means a lot more snowmobiles in the area. Does Park City want more snowmobiles up in that area? I can't see how they do, especially with where things are going with the UOL easement. And, you know, perhaps if it was pushed more towards a year-round area, you'd get a more Nordic-minded owner in Brighton Estates and keep the peace and serenity that Park City paid so dearly for.
Also, I want to just address real quickly, because of the purchase of a Bonanza Flat, it really makes Brighton Estates even, I think, more valuable, given that
True. You've
got that, right?
268 homes just came out of the market.
Right. But you also had a problem with one of the Wasatch County officials talking about that speculation. I mean, he wasn't that far off base.
Well, you mean here at its closest point, Brighton Estates is 2,000 feet away from Red Cloud. In Red Cloud, lots trade for $2.5 to $4.5 million. And sure, you're going to get speculation when you have that kind of disparity in values. You know, we don't have CC&Rs that dictate what our doorknobs are going to look like. But we have really good views up there. And, you know, people just stand up on that pass. They look to the north. They see the number one ski area in America. And they look to the south and they say, what's this?
Let's talk a little bit about that real quick with regard to Bonanza Flat. We're going through a conservation easement process here in terms of what I hear is that you folks will always be allowed to get to your property, whether it's via a road or a snowmobile is what has yet to be determined.
Well, sure. By State Road 224 and Pine Canyon Road are dedicated roads that will always be on. So I want to just clarify, there's no scenario where we cannot snowmobile home, okay? That's just not the most convenient way. Over the decades, people have established snowmobile corridors that allow them get to A to B quicker, just like you would take your quickest way home after work today. And so we have been working with Wendy Fisher, who, by the way, has been great, and the council has been great, Heinrich and them, to establish several critical snowmobile corridors so that people, first of all, it'll be easier to enforce because they're going to go there no matter what, unless you have a police officer there 24/7. And I'm not, that's just my opinion, right? So I think the best solution is to work together to establish some very critically and well thought out snowmobile corridors until such time that we can establish a permanent parking lot where we would agree to go. And we've been asked to come up with a solution rather than a problem. And so we've all worked together to suggest that the State Forest parking lot below Platts 1 and 2 in Brighton Estates be our new parking lot, which is located about a mile below the Y where we currently park, and you've been there, Leslie. That would then free up that area for Park City Municipal to do whatever activities they want to do. And we would all be delighted if we could come to that type of a solution. That would also allow us to phase out the snowmobile corridors. And we've had this discussion in depth with Wendy Fisher. So she's thinking about it, and I'm sure talking to the right people.
Okay. In terms of the next step, I mean, we're just kind of waiting to see what happens with the resolution of the lawsuit and the dissolution of the Special Services District.
Yes, I just want to address quickly that one of the things that a lot of people keep saying is that our group is not aligned and we're infighting and therefore they're not cooperating with us. The magnitude of that is less than the HOA in Park Meadows, okay? Over there, they're suing each other over the location of dog fences, okay? We've got 71 to 80% of the people aligned, wanting to move forward with proper infrastructure. And I'd ask anybody listening that's been involved in an HOA, have you ever been involved in an HOA where a 100% consensus exists over an extended period of time? I would venture to say the answer to that question is no. We have a much higher group that wants to move forward with proper infrastructure than in most cases in a complicated scenario like this.
So I've been trying to get you guys on for a long time. It took a couple comments from the Wasatch County officials to...
Yeah. Yeah, and we want to work with them. In closing, you know, our goal is to work with them, but we've been trying the nice approach for so many years now that we have to push the envelope a bit to try to get somebody to listen to us.
Wasatch County officials have a very, very hard job, and Brighton Estates, you know, it's kind of off in left field. We're 3,000 vertical feet and many miles from the closest town in Wasatch County, and they just don't get up there that often. So... you know, we needed to bring clarity to what is really happening up there. If you were going to do a completely well-rounded report with government officials from Wasatch County, you would have included the engineering department and the health department. The health department, operating under the health district, a whole different governmental entity, you know, they require year-round water to get a building permit, for them to sign off on a building permit. Engineering has its desires about roads, and they've been very good in working with us and in kind of creating a a bifurcated standard in Brighton Estates. And you know, Fire's been good to work with too, and so is Robert McDonald. But we just want to make sure that Brighton Estates is being held in a positive light. And yes, it's time for us to start having more of these interviews, perhaps on a regular basis.
Okay. Sean Brown, Mark Fisher, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:37. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, with the ski resorts now closed, Park City and Summit County getting busy to make improvements for next winter season. In the studio with an update on the number of ongoing projects, I've got the transportation manager for Summit County, Caroline Rodriguez. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's see. You held some focus groups meetings recently. Tell me what these are about and what you're trying to find out.
Yep. So the purpose of these, well, let's go back. The project that we had the focus groups for was the 224 Transit Alternatives Analysis. We are wrapping up that project, and the purpose of the focus groups was just to really reconfirm our understanding and our findings throughout the project, our technical findings and what we heard from the public. And we just wanted one last opportunity to have sort of a focused conversation around these transit alternatives.
Okay. As I recall, there were three of them, and it was where we put kind of the rapid transit lanes, whether they go down the middle of 224 in either direction, or whether they go off to the outside on both sides, or whether they go outside on one side. So what have you guys decided?
So we are still waiting for the final results, but it looks like we would be leaning towards west side running of 224. And again, we're still waiting for the final wrap up, but I think that is what we'll go forward in looking at in the environmental process.
Okay. And so what are we talking about? One lane in
bidirectional. So yes, in both directions. So it's two transit lanes.
Right. In either direction. Mm-hmm. And the thinking about the west side was because a lot of that traffic would be coming into the canyons area?
Well, no, there was a lot of different characteristics that make the west side more appealing, whether that's environmental constraints, whether that's private property owners, access. There's many variables that went into it.
All right. And we had often talked about how we don't want to build more pavement.
Mm-hmm.
So does this take basically where the road is now and makes those two lanes happen?
For the most part, of course, we will need to add a little bit more pavement to accommodate those lanes, but it's minimal.
Okay.
For the most part, it's within the current footprint.
All right. And we don't need breakdown lanes or bike path lanes or anything. It's just basically two, what, 40
No, foot wide? We do need to accommodate our friends on bikes. So there will be accommodations for the road bikers, and all of that will be determined during the design and environmental phases.
So these would go with the bus lanes as opposed to the how we have it on the existing highway.
Exactly.
Now.
So right now the buses operate on the shoulder, sort of in the breakdown lane. And this almost, I call it street legal as a joke, but it really just makes it more of a divided lane so people really, really understand that this is a bus transit. It may be maybe the hotel shuttles can operate in that lane, but it's really a divided lane so people understand it's not for a single occupancy vehicle.
And will two lanes in either direction still remain for single occupancy vehicles?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Would you also put carpools? I mean, you talked about shuttles, but when we talk about cars, whether or not they're carpools or not, they'll still remain in the...
Yeah. So that, again, that will have to be determined during the design phase. And it's called a managed lane, but we really have to understand the safety of that and also the enforcement of that. You know, hotel shuttles, other types of buses and mass transit, they're used to driving those types of vehicles, and they're specially trained. And if it's just someone commuting and driving a few other people, are they going to be able to operate safely in that managed lane? And that's something we'll have to look at.
Yeah, I remember talking about the concern if you had it in the middle, like we would see like in Salt Lake City with the tracks there. the ability or the not ability to make turns into
yes.
the area. So that's why you've decided on the one
yeah.
side.
Yeah, like I said, that's part of it. It does create a lot of conflict when you have that center running and you need to make the turns.
So what happens next from this?
So the next thing we do is we will present to the public our official findings, and that's it's called the locally preferred alternative. And then Alfred and I will talk to our respective councils and ask them to approve us moving forward into the environmental phase, which is clearly required for any federal funding.
All right. Now, are you also working with UDOT on the 248, or is that more of a city project?
That is totally a city project, but I do have an update on that if you are interested. So Alfred has reported to me that the public will have the alternatives for 248 brought forth in May. Until then, they're just finishing up the technical and environmental work.
Okay. In terms of Wasatch County, anything happening with them in terms of, you know, some, I mean, I know yep. we're talking about the park and ride lot, but.
Yeah, I mean, we continue to work with Wasatch County, especially, you know, they understand that they have a lot of commuters in and out that are coming here. And, you know, we're always trying to find partnerships, whether that's relationships or funding. And, you know, the best we can do is keep that conversation open and ask them to participate. You know, they are similar to Summit County in that they have very few staff that are wearing many hats and doing a lot of jobs. So they participate as much as they can.
So the council approving, I believe, the bond money then for the park and ride mm-hmm. at Ecker Hill. What's the progress on that?
So we are still in final design of that. And I believe that the plan is it will go out to bid very soon and hopefully start construction as soon as school gets out. And we hope that it will be finished before school goes back into session.
Right. And again, the plan there is to widen Ecker Hill, or I guess that's Kilby Road, actually, in some places just to make it
yep,
easier.
And create those turn pockets so those wishing to turn are not holding up the rest of the traffic.
All right. And that's going to be 500 parking spots, huh?
Give or take, yep.
Mm-hmm. What about the Camas Park and Ride? I know that has been reviewed and approved by the Planning Commission and City Council. As I recall, they were in favor of it, but they needed to make it official.
Yes. Yeah, so what we're doing with the Camas Park and Ride is we are just waiting for Camas City to revise their code. They would like to have a special call out for park and rides so they can dictate, you know, the lighting and the design. And right now the code doesn't have a specific section for park and ride operations. So in being a good partner, we've said we will wait until you can update your code accordingly. But yes, we are making that purchase.
Okay. How successful has the Camas commuter been?
Extremely successful. You know, we see increased ridership every month. It will be interesting to see now that the resorts are closed, what that ridership looks like. So I'll be paying attention over the next couple of months to sort of look at if our ridership drops at all. But just anecdotally from the drivers and from some of the surveys we've seen, people are riding for all sorts of reasons. You know, we have many people that report riding simply because, and this is a direct quote, driving equals stress. So they choose to ride. And that's a reflection of how great people think the route is.
Are we using big diesel buses for that, or do we have smaller transit vans?
We are using the larger diesel buses at this point.
And are we filling them up, or do we need to reconsider that?
No, I think we fill them to the point where we would not want to downsize.
Mm-hmm. And then would an electric bus make sense there?
It definitely would. The issue with the electric buses now is that we don't have any that can hold a long enough charge to get there. But we are working with Proterra to purchase some of those longer running vehicles. And I know Park City Transit did a really great demo a few months ago where they took one down to the Capitol and they made it almost all the way up the hill on a charge. And so that long range technology is there. And we're working with Proterra to apply for some grants to get the vehicles that could potentially go all the way from the valley up into Park City and then out to Camas.
All right. And it's still just a morning and afternoon commute?
It is at this point. Again, the more riders we get, the more successful the route is, the more runs we can add.
Mm-hmm. And will it be cut back at all for...
It will
this,
not.
This spring?
Nope.
Those buses remain.
That's right. We see it as, because it's a commuter route, we want people to have that dependability. We want them to know that the route is going to be there for when they need to get to work or school or whatever they're using it for.
Okay. Anything else, Caroline, that you wanted to mention?
I just want to let our listeners know that Alfred has reported to me that there is also a design coming forth on the 248 pedestrian tunnel by the high school. So look for that over the next couple of weeks.
I also wanted just to mention later this month, then we've got the relaunch of the e-bike program.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. April 28th, the bike share will be relaunching. We have approximately 40 new bikes coming. And then over the summer, we'll be also adding some new stations. So we look forward to sharing all that information with people.
Okay. Talk to you about that next month. Thanks,
okay.
Caroline.
Thank you so much.
It's Caroline Rodriguez, the Regional Transportation Planner for Summit County. 8:49, good morning. Well, the Park City Education Foundation has received a number of grant requests from the district's schools. In the studio with an update, I have Foundation's Associate Director of Communications and Development, Jen Bello. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
So these are for the school grants, as they're known. How many applications did you receive?
Yes, so we received a record high 69 school grant applications and about $450,000 in funding requests. It is a record too, a little bit, because we have rolled our school and district grants into one bucket. So typically in the summer, we award district grants, and we've been doing that for about 4 or 5 years, and we decided it was better to roll everything into school grants because that gave the principals and the admin at each school a little more control over what they wanted and what they felt they could really do. So that is part of the reason. But we also, I think people are just, the teachers and the principals are realizing that there is this big bucket of money there and that they should go ahead and ask for it.
Yeah, I don't think the big bucket is $450,000 worth. How much do you have to
So we have $300,000. So that is what's nice about putting the two together. It used to be $150,000 each. So we have $300,000. And it's exciting to see there are several grants that we get year after year. So for instance, LIA, Latinos in Action, the National Competition Fund, which helps cover the cost for when our high school academic clubs like Debate or FBLA or Robotics go to nationals, because those often don't get found out until March or April. So there's not a lot of time to fundraise for those trips. There's a lot of mindfulness that's continuing in the district. So I think all the schools are mindful about, you know, what's going on with their students, and those seem to be working. And they range from, you know, STEM initiatives to we have some choir, we have some viola asks. So across the board.
Yep. So these are all for next school year. They get them in place now for next year.
Yep. They're all for next school year. So our school grant committee will meet at the end of April. They'll go through all these and vet them and narrow it down to the $300,000. We have sat down already with the district. So we sit down with Dr. Einhorn and Joe Stout to a lot of those you know, kind of internet-based grants. We have to be sure that we don't have firewalls that are up that would prevent us from using that, or that they're compatible with our laptops. So those have already been vetted, and then our committee will look at them and then make the proposal to our board, and the board will vote. And usually the committee does a lot of research, so they say yes. And then so in May, the schools and principals will find out that they get the award, and then the money is available July 1.
Who's on this committee?
So it's a combination of board members, community members. It's all volunteer. We typically have people who have kids in the districts, as well as parents whose kids are in college, and they have a really interesting take on things too, as their kids are going through college, and they're like, you know what, they really could use this to be more prepared. So it's like our teacher grant committee. It's a range of community members and volunteers.
And then where does the $300,000 come from?
Well, that's all the money we raise, you know, that we ask for every year, of course. So both starting with school registration, we ask for the dollar a day, the $180. Running with Ed is the main funder of school grants. So that is a biggie. We raised $280,000 last year with Running with Ed. You know, this year we're giving out $300,000. So when you sign up for something like Running with Ed, or when you go to the gala or give your $180, the very next year your money is going back out to those programs.
All right. And then how are these different than teacher grants?
So teacher grants, teachers are asking for those in the classroom. So a lot of times teacher grants might be smaller because they typically are for one classroom. A teacher has researched something and they think, oh, I'd really like to try this in my classroom. And a lot of these school grants then are often teacher grants that become broader. So the principal or other teachers will say, oh, you know, that looks really interesting. I really liked what I saw in your classroom. And it'll spread grade-wise or school-wise. So some of that, for instance, so PACE, which is the Program for Academic Challenge and Enrichment. So that started off with just some STEM projects 1 year, and now that all the PACE teachers at the elementary schools ask for more curriculum and tools every year. Latinos in Action started at Treasure in one class, and that has spread both down to Ecker and up to the high school. So the teacher grants are a lot of times they're new, they're trial, and then with school grants we can spread those if they work.
Okay. Running with that, as you mentioned, a big fundraiser that's happening May 19th.
Yes.
Too late to sign up?
No, we're in last chance registration. So the price went up. So it'll be open till a week after break. So Friday the 20th, I believe, will be the last day to sign up. And kids and teachers are $50 the whole way. So that's great. So keep signing up. That Park City Mountain grant is available to the schools that have the highest participation. So when you get back from spring break, if you're not here but listening, be sure to register for Running With Ed, because that is a giant fundraiser for us to fund these grants.
Okay. Anything else, Jen?
No, that's it. Just want to thank the community for their amazing support. We can't fund $1 million in programs without you guys. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you.